Welcome to the Rod of Iron Podcast, Fundamental Baptist, breaking down discussions, dogma, and daily events. I'm your host, Pastor Bruce Mejia, First Works Baptist Church here in beautiful Southern California. And we have a special guest with us this evening. Pastor Berzins is with us from Stronghold Baptist Church in Georgia.
Sir.
What specific part in Georgia?
Norcross.
What is it?
Norcross.
Norcross.
Just outside Atlanta.
Outside of Atlanta, Norcross, Georgia. And so he'll be with us this week. He's actually preaching on Thursday. And if he wasn't planning to, it's too late. I already announced it. So
oops.
You are now. And of course, we have Brother Hike here and Brother Ulysses on the PA. And so we're looking forward to a great episode. I'm just going to pick Pastor Berzin's brain a little bit. We're going to do some fellowshipping, just kind of shoot the breeze. And we'll see where the conversation takes us. All right. And so, Pastor Berzin, you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's do it. So how was your flight?
Good, not bad at all. I was early.
Yeah.
Caught the first flight out, but I needed to work today, so I got in. I think I had my rental car by about 9:30.
Is this the second time you've been here this year?
I don't think so. I mean, I've been out to California, went out for the Red Hot.
No. Oh, yeah. But I'm saying, didn't he preach for us at the beginning of the year?
I don't remember
if
that was this year or last year.
Was that last year?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I've already sent another one of my guys out in between my visits.
That's right. I wasn't here for you because we switched.
We switched
pulpits. Yeah. Oh, that's what it was. We switched pulpits, and then one of your church members came out here as well, right? And then you came out here for the Red Hot, but that was in Northern California.
Yeah, that was in Sacramento, and then I was at Faithful Word, of course, right before that. So
yeah.
That's been all my traveling.
Okay. So how's the church doing?
Great.
Yeah?
Great.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, we're actually expanding into the space next to ours. So that space became available recently, and is a perfect answer to prayer because we've been starting to outgrow our space.
Yeah.
You know, we've been having some good attendances, and it's about that time. And we were looking around, and it's just been really difficult to find. So I really feel sorry for these guys that are, you know, like Steadfast are getting kicked out of their churches because it is not easy to find good locations to have a church.
Yeah, especially if you're growing.
Yeah, and there's a lot of special things you got to consider, you know, the bathrooms and parking and, you know, all this stuff that a lot of other businesses don't have to worry about.
Right.
You know, with churches, you got some special needs,
right?
So, but no, when we found out that space became available, we jumped on it. We got all the permitting done. Now we're just waiting. We got some scheduling for demo work to be done to get the wall down in between. It's going to not quite double our space, but it's significantly gonna increase the capacity.
That's awesome.
So we're doubling the bathrooms.
How many do you guys run right now?
What was it last
week? Like on a Sunday morning?
Yeah, last week we had 100.
Oh, nice.
We don't always run, you know, 100, but it's not abnormal now either. So we're kind of in the, it could be 70, 80, 90, 100 in any given Sunday.
That's great.
You know, but it's depending on sickness and certain big families. we have a couple of really large families that are over 10, you know, like 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a big difference, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you have a family of 12 and they get sick, it affects the attendance. We have a family like that in our church, just like 10 or 12 people or something like that. And if all of them get sick, it's just, it can affect the attendance to a certain extent, you know? But we went through a little bit of a sick season recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're going to be going into the sixth season again in December, only because, you know, you have like the holidays and then, you know, the boost in sugar. And so your immune system is down and then people start getting sick and the kids have fevers and one kid has a fever and then they spread it to the other kid and then everyone gets sick. Yeah. You know, it's just like a yearly thing. You know what I mean?
It happens.
Yeah. Well, that's great. You guys are expanding. The last time I was there, it looked like it was packed out.
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah, everything's going really well. I mean, even the, you know, the salvations are up, the baptisms are up, the We've got new converts that have been out soul winning, baptized, out soul winning with us.
Nice.
It's just really exciting. It's an exciting time for our church.
This doesn't really make sense, though, because from what I heard, the new IFB is like dying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard that, too.
I heard the ship is sinking. Yeah. It's dying. So what you're saying, it must not.
It just must not be
true. You
must
be lying. Yeah. I think you're lying. Yeah. But.
I'm using this platform just to spread as much lies as I can.
Yeah,
that's it.
Because this doesn't fit the narrative of the fact that the new IFB is sinking.
But if you came out, you might actually see something different, though. Like if you actually came to our church.
I don't know.
Like
I'm not going to go.
Came and visited.
I'm not going to go because I'm going to go with the narrative that the ship is sinking. Yeah, no, seriously. I mean, I think most of the new IFB churches, pretty much all of them, are growing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're growing in attendance. Their baptisms, salvations, new people. I always hear about new people getting integrated, new people learning how to soul win. It's like the common theme of every church. You know?
We've been around now for 4 years. So, and I really feel like the last year and a half has just been now like we've been kind of, I think, just getting established for the first few years and just maintaining slow growth, but you know, kind of real slow and steady. And then the past 12 months, 18 months has been just really, really exciting. Lots of new people, lots of visitors, just a lot of cool things happening. So
that's awesome. And it's obviously a major difference from Word of Truth in Prescott Valley. I was there and actually I have my wife's grandfather lived in Prescott Valley. So when I went to go preach there, I had him come over. And it's obviously a really small town.
Yep.
So it kind of shows you that it's not necessarily like there's anything wrong with the church or anything wrong with the way ministry is done. Sometimes the areas are just not as receptive because you basically took everything that you're doing over there and you took it to Georgia and now you're just like flourishing.
No, exactly. And that's, you know, I wouldn't have even thought about moving except we had already knocked all the doors too. I mean, it kind of hit the whole area.
Yeah.
And we'd already spread out into some of the neighboring cities and got some of those done, some of those half done. You know, I mean, we were spreading out into the next place we're going to go to is Chino Valley. That was another area. There's just, it's like we're going around this radius and it just kind of seemed like the same mentality.
What was the soul winning like in Prescott Valley?
Well, what was really interesting, it's the one area that I think I've run into the most saved people.
Mm-hmm.
Just out soul winning, it was not uncommon to run into one or more saved people
in Prescott
like
Valley?
Every week. Yeah.
Oh wow.
And this is what was frustrating, right? Because I'm running into people who are saved,
but they're not in church,
or they're just going to some watered down church.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's about it. But it was just no one was excited, right? I mean, here we're doing something different, right? We're going out. We're preaching the gospel. We're trying to make waves and do something big for God. And everyone's just like,
yeah,
I don't really care. But and the salvations were, we were getting people saved. I think we had approximately, 100, over 100 people saved every year.
Oh, that's great.
You know, in the 4.5, 5 years that it's been, it was around. Mm-hmm. So we still did a good work.
Yeah.
We still reached a lot of people. We still helped a lot of people. But overall, just the area just did not seem very wanting of our style church.
Yeah, and it looks from the last time that I went soul winning in Atlanta, it seemed really receptive because there's like a marathon that we had over there. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly. There was a conference or something, and we went there. We went soul winning, and I remember just being really receptive.
Yeah, well, and I mean, that's why a lot of people have asked me, why Atlanta? Why did you choose here? What did you go there for? And that was when I was looking at places to start a new church.
Mm-hmm.
That was right when the mega marathons were still happening.
Yeah.
So I was able to see the results of that current mega marathon in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And there just was a lot. There's a lot of people that attended. And for not having a new IB church there, obviously Arizona, Texas, they're going to have these huge attendances, right? California, huge attendances, huge salvations because you've got a lot of people going out because you've got established new IB churches there.
Yeah.
But this was an area where there was like, I want to say at least like 30 people showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Just 30 people going out soul winning.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the salvations, but it was like equal, it was just a lot. It was like maybe even double the salvations or something as the people out there, like 2-1, something to that effect. It was a lot. I was just like, man, that's amazing.
That's a good way to determine where to start a church too. Is just like where all the soul winners at, where the
soul winners and people want to hear it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's for like, sure. If it's receptive, yeah, that's awesome. So you've been there for 4 years.
Yep.
And the church is growing. You're seeing a lot of salvations. You're getting baptisms out there. How do you see like the receptiveness of the people as far as like even after the gospel is being preached and they get saved? Have you caught a lot of flack for what you preach over there?
Not really. I mean, we had how long? I don't know how long it was now when I had that news story done on me that actually caused me to lose my job. But it was even that story was not like what everyone else gets. I didn't even think it was that bad of a hit piece. You know, it was kind of like.
Like they did a good job, you're saying?
Or, yeah. Like they didn't, they weren't just completely taking me out of context. They weren't just twisting all my words. Obviously, they were using some statements that might be more inflammatory or whatever, and they definitely cast me in a shadowy light. But overall, hearing it, I'm just like, yeah, I mean, that's...
Well, here's my opinion on that, okay? When people make hit pieces on us, you know, if that hit piece was made on your average pastor, they would think like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. You know what I mean? But for us, it's like, yeah, I did say that. Yeah. It's like, I'm glad you're actually putting that out there. You know what I mean? For us, we see it differently. Like, oh, okay, yeah, get the word of God out there. That's a good article.
Yeah.
You know, like they wrote an article about our church on our YouTube channel. And I thought it was an awesome article. I'm like, he's telling the truth.
Yep,
you know,
that is what we do.
That is what we do. It is. Yeah. Did you get, so you didn't get any like flack over that?
No, so what, like it never hit national.
Okay.
And that's when things explode, right? When stories go national, then you get the alphabet animals come out of the woodwork from everywhere and they
Sorry. No, you're good. Yeah.
There's this video.
I love
video.
All the terms, alphabet animals. Well, you have the, what does Pastor Shelley call them? The AIDS community.
I like alphabet animals because my kids had this video, and it's like it's a kid's video, right? And it's all about learning the alphabet with these animals. So now forever that's there's just this song that goes along with it. I'm not going to sing it, but
it has
a song
that connotation
where it's just like,
that's funny.
Let's count the animals from A to Z, and then it's, you know, like A is for anteater, whatever, you know, and it goes through all that, but that's stuck in my head now.
Go ahead and sing it for us. No, I'm just kidding.
Not going to happen.
But that's cool.
So we never got, and I think during that news cycle when my story came out, something else big happened nationally, and it just went just kind of under the radar.
Oh, okay.
We never got anything more after that. So, and you know, I'm fine with that. Whatever it was, it allowed us to just continue to grow. We also are in a pretty good spot for our location for the church building. There's no sidewalks.
Oh, so
someone wanted to protest us, and we're kind of on a hill. So it's like, if you're going to the places they could protest, we wouldn't see them.
Yeah.
And there's not very many businesses there. And we take up now like a third of the whole complex.
That's great.
So
it's not very conducive to protesting, basically.
No, not at all. And we're not really interrupting anyone else's business. Even if they did come out to protest, it's like everyone's closed.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Who knows whatever's going to happen. I don't know what's going to come our way. We've had some good, just been blessed with where we're at and what we're doing. And
Is the furthest that someone travels to come to your church?
I think at least 2.5 hours.
From like a different state?
Oh, yeah. Okay. We have multiple families that come from South Carolina.
Wow.
We've had people coming from Alabama and from Tennessee.
Man, I mean, we thought it was crazy we had a couple, and they moved now, but they were coming from Utah to our church. You have like from multiple states.
Yeah.
That's commitment right there.
It absolutely is. I mean, that's the type of people, like the church is just awesome, right? I mean, the people that are coming are really dedicated.
Yeah.
They really take it seriously. They love the church. It's a great church. And it's also now encouraging to me because I'm looking at this going like, hey, church plant South Carolina. Church plant Alabama, and it's gonna, and those churches will thrive.
So, are you planning to start a church in those
states?
When
we can, yeah. Okay. I mean, it's
is that in the works?
That's yeah. It's going to take a little bit.
Yeah.
We still
obviously need the leaders and all that.
I mean, we're training men. Mm-hmm. No one's at the level yet to be able to take on that task.
Yeah.
Yet, but we're
you can
training.
Foresee it in the future.
Yeah,
that,
yeah, we can. And, you know, everyone has a little bit, all the pastors have, I think, a little bit of a different approach to determining when they feel people are ready and kind of what they want to set them out to do and whatever. And I'm extremely conservative on.
Well, explain to me. What do you mean by that? Like,
so conservative.
Give me an example if what would be some qualifications? Obviously, you have the qualifications.
Well, we have the qualifications
of the Bible.
In the Bible, right?
Yeah. But aside from that, you would have your own personal preferences.
Let me just, yeah. So a preference that I see maybe that other people have used that I probably wouldn't use is, you know, the Bible says you have to have obviously children. Mm-hmm. So more than one child. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
But in order to determine if you're ruling your house well and faithfully, I would want to see more of growth in the children. So not like a 1 and a 3-year-old.
I see.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
To just check the box. Like I kind of would want to, I want to feel more comfortable of like.
So let me ask you, in that regard, are you saying to send someone out where they are permanently the pastor? Or for that individual to be sent out to just be the leader of that church
plant. Two different
plant.
Things. That's right. Two different things. Okay. And I treat those two different things.
I see. So you would want to see more growth to be able to see that those children are not unruly. Mm-hmm. They would have to be older.
To be able to understand to be able commands, to determine, right? I mean, like a 1-year-old, how do you determine if a 1-year-old's unruly?
Right.
Right. I mean, they're.
So you're basically saying that you would want to see that a man's ruling his house well, his children are not unruly, they're in subjection with all gravity. Mm-hmm. Before you would actually lay hands on him to ordain him as the official pastor of that church.
Yes,
I see.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Now, I actually had this discussion with someone recently at church too, because they were asking me just about different, you know, with church planning especially. I have no problem sending people out to what, you know, what we call the boots on the ground and help to run the ministry and help to do things on a day to day administratively. They're not the pastor. They don't have the pastoral authority over the church. It's just a church plant. And I'm cool with all that.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that I have decided to approach that is it's going to be on a case-by-case basis with the people involved and on the distance. So like a church plant that's closer to us, I'd be more willing to have somebody over that.
Who's like
that
less
might,
qualified.
Yeah, less qualified.
Yeah.
Because then it's easier for me to take up the slack or do anything and have more oversight, direct oversight when needed.
Whereas versus, if it's a little further, you would need that person to be a little more mature, you know, kind of have their stuff in order.
Yeah.
I mean, so you don't necessarily have to worry so much about like the small things.
Exactly. I mean, if there's someone that's like, I'm they're really close to already being ordained.
Yeah.
Like, great. Like, here's going to be some more training for you. I think this is going to be really good opportunity. And
that makes a lot of sense because obviously someone who is not necessarily mature in the Lord or they're a novice, you know, the closer they are, the more mistakes they can make and you can kind of help them with that. Mm-hmm. Whereas if like they're in another state,
it just becomes difficult. I mean,
it just becomes difficult. Yeah. And then you're just kind of like, oh man, what am I going to do with this person? You know, what if they quit?
Yep.
What if they get discouraged or, you know what I mean? Like you would want someone who's, at least has that aptitude to kind of deal with problems and not, you know, overburden you or something.
Well, and there's also to consider too, like, so what I also consider is not just the eligibility of the people from a scriptural standpoint, but you know, they have families, they have jobs. What's it going to take for them to uproot and go there? And is it something that they even want to do?
Yeah.
Right? Like I have these ideas of where I would like to see churches planted and they, if they even have that desire, may want to go somewhere else.
So are you saying that, like, for example, if you have an individual in your church who is working towards that end of being a pastor, are you saying that you would prefer for them to favor the area that you would want to go plant a church in, or does it matter?
No, not necessarily. It doesn't matter, but that would come into play onto when I would be wanting to send them out.
Yeah,
right?
I see what you're saying.
So let's say someone's hometown is in, I don't know how far, like a
San Diego,
New Mexico, whatever, right?
Oh,
just
okay.
I mean, just farther away from Georgia, right?
Okay.
Just anywhere, start going out west or whatever. And they didn't want to, you know, start a church in one of these areas that's real close to us. then I'm going to want them to be much more prepared. If not just send out a pastor, send out someone who's a lot closer.
In simplest form, you basically, that would almost be put on the back burner because the immediate areas would be probably a number one priority.
Because they're easier.
And it's more likely for them to take that position if they are willing to go closer.
Yeah.
Whereas if they're going further out, they need more training.
And I already know these close areas, we have people.
Mm-hmm.
I know the soul winnings. We've been doing these soul winning marathons at these states.
Yeah.
I mean, the soul winning's been good. The people are there. There's a lot of people. I don't know. And I'm trying to help people see this too, right? How could you not want to have a church, like a brand new church plant with a whole bunch of people that are going to come ready, dedicated? I love that about starting in Atlanta.
Yeah.
We were just talking about Word of Truth. Mm-hmm. Word of Truth started with nobody in my house going out and knocking doors, which that's hard. That's hard. It's hard work.
Well, that's pretty much my philosophy when it comes to church planning, that churches should start churches, obviously. But along with that is that the church plant that you start should remain a church plant for a little bit. And the main church should have a little bit of authority over that until it's ready to be on its own. And I think it's far more productive if the pastor starts that church and there's already a group of people there to do the soul winning. They can song lead. Maybe they can play a piano.
Yep.
They can do all those things. And I think that's more of a biblical model. And in fact, years ago, before we started First Works Baptist Church, which was previously Faithful Word, I had helped my father-in-law start a church. And that's exactly what he did. He basically sent like sitters to the church plant that was about 30 minutes away from the home church. And there was workers, there were song leaders, there's people that can run different ministries. And they were there for a couple months until they can train someone, to kind of take their place. And then, you know, that church was kind of functioning on its own after a while. But it had like a group of people there already. So it's like, you're not singing a solo when you're doing the congregationals or something. Like there's a group of people that are already singing with you and there's a group of soul winners out there. Mm-hmm. I think that's a lot better because then the momentum is already there.
Yeah, you're already ahead in the game.
Yeah, right?
Sure. It really is hard. I'm telling you.
From scratch. From scratch. My father-in-law started from scratch. He called it like parachute church planning, where it's like you just drop a guy somewhere and he's like, just do it. You know what I mean? And he did that and he said it was so hard.
Yeah.
Because you just don't have anybody. It's just like you, your wife, and your kids.
It's all building momentum.
Yeah.
Right? So, and because some people, they're not comfortable, like, oh man, there's like two people here.
Yeah.
In this guy's house.
Yeah.
You know, I've definitely seen people pull up and then drive away, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
So, hey, if you're doing it that way, great. Like,
yeah.
God will build the church.
For sure.
God will build the church. It is harder. But there is something to be said for having already a bunch of people, a group, a solid core.
Yeah.
It's just going to move things along faster.
Yeah. Well, I'm all for streamlining the process, you know, and doing it that way because I just think it's – and then, you know, if you get a guy who starts a church or helps start a church, you know, they can easily lose motivation if you just drop them somewhere in a different state. If they don't have the experience, like they can lose motivation, they can get discouraged, they're going to want to quit. It requires a certain level of fortitude to just plow away even though you're not succeeding. You know what I mean?
Well, and that's why as a pastor, when you're selecting somebody to do that, you keep in mind what they're going in
with
too.
What are they capable of?
And and you're how you observe that person, what do you think that they're, you know, if they're able to withstand, you know,
if they've got that making sure they don't faint in the day of adversity.
Yeah.
But whereas, you know, the church plant, you know, like my father-in-law basically told me when we started that church, he was the pastor and I was the boots on the ground. And then it kind of gave me an opportunity to kind of like fail a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Just like kind of mess up because then I would bring it to him and he kind of just like fix it and teach me and rebuke me and correct me. But then I learned a lot.
Sure.
So it's just like, you know, I wasn't, you know, essentially just destroying the church or something with bad decisions because it was still, you know, under his authority.
Right.
But at the same time, I learned a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I learned how to work.
You learn by
people.
Failing. I mean, when you fail things, you do things that are, you know.
And it's a safe way to fail.
Yeah.
Because you still have your pastor there you can communicate with. I think that's a great idea.
That's one of the reasons why for all the guys that I train too, They have to be going through some kind of ministry. So like we do like nursing home ministries, or we do like a prison ministry or anything like that.
Yeah.
You have to get experience doing things like that,
mm-hmm.
because that also just builds experience. So those are times where they're preparing sermons, they're going to be running the show, they're going to be doing things, and you know, they have to learn on the fly. You have to learn on the job. And
are you
all
saying
that
like you have to observe productivity, like if they're productive people?
No, I'm talking about just for my training program,
mm-hmm.
is you need to be involved in some ministry, and some ministry that you're going to be responsible for.
Okay.
And the reason why is because I learned a lot that way myself. So Pastor Anderson suggested me starting up a nursing home ministry. He really just put all of that on me. He said, okay, you're going to do it. You're going to contact the people. You know, he was there for me if I needed any help or any questions, right, to get any guidance. But the ball was in my court. Say, okay, you go out, you find the people, you make the schedule whenever you're able to do it. You make the commitment. You make sure you're there every week. If you need anyone to fill in for you, that's your obligation, right? It's my responsibility. So it became my ministry.
You have to learn how to build something.
Yeah.
Build people.
And have the responsibility factor of going, now every week, I have to have a sermon ready.
Yeah.
Every week. I'm responsible for that. So if I'm going to go on vacation, if I'm going to do anything else, you know, I'm going to make sure someone's going to fill that spot.
Yeah. Teaching them responsibility.
Yeah. I mean, it's all of it. For me, just doing the sermons every week was a big deal.
Yeah.
Because way back then, I mean, it could take me 8 hours to write a 15-minute sermon.
Yeah.
That was a big deal.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's good. Also, man, what was I thinking of right now? You know, when you send someone out, I think it's a really good idea, the whole churches planning churches, because like if you think about it, let's say you send someone out from your church and they're kind of under your leadership for a while, and then they become fully qualified, and then they become autonomous, they become independent. Mm-hmm. They've kind of built up a really good relationship with you as their pastor. And so even though they're independent, like they can always reach out to you.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because you have the experience. And so if they run into a situation at their church that they're not necessarily familiar with, mm-hmm. they can always contact their pastor because they have a good relationship with them. Mm-hmm. And be like, hey, what do you think I should do in this situation? Or, you know, do you have any counsel or advice? I think that's a really good thing. I think it's important for like pastors to have pastors who are more experienced in them that they can still reach out to and contact.
Absolutely. Look, I've done that plenty of times.
Yeah, me too.
You run across situations that haven't experienced before. Just got a question. Hey, I'm curious how you would handle something like this.
Yeah.
It's good to have that.
Yeah,
good,
amen.
Good, you know, in the multitude of counselors or safety, right?
For sure. I mean, I'm just saying like when you plant that church, it's like I'm assuming like the church planner, the one who's there, it's going to be really close to the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They obviously have a good relationship. Like you still have a good relationship with Pastor Anderson. Mm-hmm. You guys are really good friends. Even though he's essentially almost like a mentor to us, mm-hmm. he's still your friend.
Yep.
And I'm sure you're comfortable with just calling him up and saying, hey, I have a question about something, because you have a good relationship.
Absolutely,
with him. So I think that's a really huge benefit to like planting churches in that manner.
Yes.
You don't cut ties completely.
Well, think about that compared to the current model of so many other churches of sending people off to Bible college.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You know what I mean? I mean, there's extra bond that grows with pastors training men to preach and stuff, because you're spending more time together just naturally. So when you're going through that whole training ground process and everything, you know, these guys, and then you rely on them in church more, and you're dealing with them more because they take on more of the load, right?
Yeah, and Bible college kind of severs that relationship. Yeah. It kind of strains that, because you're kind of estranged from your pastor. So if you do get sent out, it's just like, you know, that closeness, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, is not there.
Yeah.
That's definitely true. Yeah. Well, I had the privilege, even though that I went to Bible college, the college that I went to was my pastor's Bible college, so I still was close to him.
Right.
But I can definitely see that with like other colleges, if they send them out of state to go somewhere, they don't see their pastor for years.
Yeah.
And they may stay in contact with them a little bit, but then when they come back and they're ready to be sent out, it's just like they don't really have that relationship. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a plus. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
What else would you say, you know, as far as preparing someone to start a church? What else would you be looking for?
For the ministry? I mean, they have to have a desire.
Yeah.
Too. I mean, that is
like very a self-starter. Important.
Yeah. Someone who wants to do it. Someone who's already showed themselves faithful too. I mean, you know the obligations. You have to be able to meet a lot of obligations and be able to juggle a lot.
Yeah.
To keep things running.
Yeah.
It's definitely time consuming. And one other point too, I think on with the children is, you know, I remember the difficulties because while the pastor is the authority and in charge of the church, there is a lot of work on the wife and the family. There's an impact. There's a toll taken for doing that ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't overlook the preparedness and readiness of the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the strain.
Yeah.
And if you have a mom with just little ones, that's just like really difficult to, like, if they're already having a hard time, maybe, you know, they're fitting the bill in so many areas, great people, great Christian workers, whatever, but you can still see there's maybe some, you know, not still quite solid.
Give us an example.
With other things happening maybe in their life or whatever. You want to have people who are solid.
Yeah.
Obviously, everybody's got some level of chaos going on in their life at some point, right? Especially you have kids, and you're serving the Lord, you're doing a lot of stuff. But
like, are you saying, like, if you feel like maybe this area and their family, the children, that area is being neglected?
Well, that could be a possibility, right? Because that's obviously a possibility with pastoring. You know, just end up getting so consumed with everything that you end up neglecting the home. But that's not really what I was thinking of as much as just the family needs to be in order before you start something so big.
So explain to me, what do you mean by
so not
in by, order?
Yeah, exactly. No, so not just in order of, obviously the kids need to be obedient, right? Wife needs to be obedient, right? So you're not going to have any type of
conflict
in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe there's a lot of hardship of even being able to say, make it to church and not quite getting there on time and not, you know, and
I see what
you're
saying.
These little things, right? But those little things, if you're not, you know, kind of paying attention to it, are the types of things that can grow maybe a little bit more out of control as you add a lot more weight and a lot more duty to the.
Are you saying, like, for example, let me see if I can explain it. If basically, like, the pastor, even if he's not the pastor yet, but the overseer and his family, they essentially have to be the examples of that, whatever the congregation.
Yeah.
So in order to be the example, they have to be able to fulfill the basics
already.
You have to be the example of being punctual, example of soul winning, attendance. Mm-hmm. Like, you just have to be the example of, you know, because people are looking towards you.
That's right.
As an example of what a family should be. So if they're lacking character in those areas, maybe an example of discipline, example of, you know, chastising your children and not, you know, you have to essentially fit the bill at its most basic level, you know, in order for them to be sent out because of the fact that they're examples to everyone else.
That's right.
So if they're not fulfilling even, like, for example, attendance, or they're always late, or, you know, there's just something going on in that family where just they lack character in a certain area, that's what you're referring to.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's good. Amen.
You said it much better.
No, I think that's great because I do agree with that. I think for me, it's like if they don't have those basics down, that means that for me, the basics are very important.
Of course they are, yeah.
And the way you display that they're important is that you execute it with excellence. Mm-hmm. You know, you're consistent with it. And it's not like, you know, obviously the pastor or the overseer, he's not going to be doing a barbecue on Sunday night or something like that. You know what I mean? I'm saying, like, you know, they're there, but they arrive 15 minutes late. It seems like they're disorderly. Mm-hmm. They're not necessarily taking the work of God serious as leaders. Then that's not necessarily a good sign of leadership or someone who should take over a church plant.
And at least it just shows that, like, hey, there's some work to be done here.
Yeah,
for sure. It's not time yet.
Yeah.
And they could be great, like I said, great people doing a lot, right?
Yeah.
And have a lot of knowledge, but just some things to just look for them, right?
Because I agree with that. Because
it's such an important function and role. Like, you really don't want to set anyone up for failure or disaster, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because that's a huge setback when you're getting someone sent out and then it fails.
Yeah.
Right? Because it causes a lot of ridicule and mocking and everything else. You know, you don't count the costs.
Right.
And then
also you could just damage that person's...
Yeah, their own spiritual life.
Their own spiritual life, yeah. And they get discouraged and everything. Yeah. So it's not like, you know, because people could listen to this and say, oh man, that just seems too strict or something. That just seems a little too much. But really, I mean, people's lives are at stake. Yeah. Like other people's lives, spiritual lives.
Well, and think about too, I mean, people might move to join a church. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That almost happened to us.
Yeah.
You know, we were going to start a church a couple years ago in Denver, Colorado. And we were essentially sold a bill of goods because it was communicated that, you know, there's this big core group there and everyone tithes and they have enough money to support a pastor. And I mean, they kind of sold it. And they, when I say they, it's like two people. Okay. And, you know, they basically were saying like, oh man, you know, people are faithful. We got like 30 people,
yeah.
And you know, they can support a pastor. It's great out here. And so they even wrote out, like, they gave us a packet of, and I was like, wow, they got their stuff
organized
here.
Yeah.
Very organized. Yeah. So I flew out there and I was like, I want to fly out there. I want to meet everyone. You know, this 30 people that you mm-hmm. claim are here, I want to meet them. And then I just want to spend time with you guys and just kind of get to know the people there. And then we'll consider whether we're going to start a church. And, you know, if all of what you say is so, then, you know, I don't see why we couldn't start a church, you know. So we went out there and there was like, I don't know, seven people. Mm-hmm. And maybe like out of those seven, four of them already had a different church they went to. And, you know, we went soul winning and the soul winning, it was just kind of disorganized. And I was just kind of like, this is not what they communicated. And then they were just kind of talking to me like, yeah, so when you make us independent, like, well, like, wait a minute, hold on. I was like, make you independent? Like, you're not even an institution yet, you know? And so he's like, well, we're looking at a building tomorrow. You know, we can go look at that building. And then we'll go from there. And then, you know, this person can preach. And I was like, are you able to preach? And they're just like, I don't know. I've never done it before in my life, you know? And I'm just like, oh man. So I remember going back to my hotel room and I was just praying, like, I don't know if this is, I don't think this is of the Lord. And I just prayed and I was just like, Lord, just kind of expose if this is a really bad idea. So we were driving in the vehicle and the people who help me find out what the truth is probably going to be listening to this, so they know exactly how this went down. They're really good people.
Yeah.
But I was driving in their vehicle, and we're on our way to the building, and the husband was driving, and the wife was sitting behind me, and I just got this bad feeling in my stomach. I'm just like, this is such a bad idea. I don't like this idea. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is going to happen. And then the wife's like, Pastor Mejia, I have something to tell you. And I was just like, tell me everything. I was like, leave no stone unturned. Tell me everything. Yeah. I was just like, now's the time. And I thought, I was like, you need to tell me everything now. Don't leave anything out. And he's like, this person said there's 30 people. There is no 30 people here. They're like, literally. In fact, he said, or she said, when the meeting was over yesterday, he told us to make sure to contact people from our church to come tomorrow to make it look like it was like a lot of people. And I was just like, that's all I needed to hear. So we get there to the building and, you know, the guy, the real estate agent, he's just kind of showing the building. And I'm just like looking around thinking to myself, like, nope. I'm just putting on a show right now because we're not, this.
Like, oh yeah, that's nice.
I'm like, wow, look at that. Cool. Wall, you know, and he's just like, so then we go out and the guy's just like, so what do you think? I was like, well, you know, we're not starting this church. I was like, you guys are the only people here. I think all of you need to go back to your church. You need to go find a church or go to their church because we're not starting anything anytime soon. And the guy was just livid. Him and his wife were just beside themselves.
Wow.
They'd even talk to me for the rest of the trip. You know, we went because we're supposed to go back to the family's house to go have lunch. Mm-hmm. And they went back and they went upstairs and just locked themselves in a room and just never came out.
Wow.
And I was thinking to myself, like, man, we dodged the bullet.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because sometimes,
you know. That's why you got to be diligent. I mean, it really is. It's that important.
Yeah, for sure. That could have been a disaster. It was like a nightmare.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're absolutely right.
That's interesting that happened in Denver, too.
Why is that? What, you like Denver?
No, I do like Denver. Denver's pretty cool. That was one of the places when
it's a weird airport.
Yeah, very weird. Before we started Word of Truth, we were traveling around and I was considering different places and I went to that place. I visited a church there and I just had this weird opportunity where the guy was like I just met him that day and was like inviting me to start this church there, and like they would have all this funding and all this stuff, and I'm just going like, and he was telling me about this ministry that they had, where the money was coming from. No, I doubt it.
Wait, what?
This was bizarre. Okay, they had this ministry where it was to like support. I don't remember. It was so long ago, but it was like children. It was some type of a children's thing where they were like collecting this money to have kids to be able to go to school. Or something like that. Mm-hmm. But basically what he was saying was that, well, the church was able to use some of that funding to be able to start this church. Yeah, and that's why I was like,
whoa,
that doesn't sound like a good idea.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, if someone was interested just in money, it sounds like it would probably be a really good deal.
Yeah.
But that's not what I was interested in at all. Crazy. I was just like, no.
Wow.
Like, I'll think about it. Thanks.
You thought about it for a little bit? You're like, no, thanks.
Yeah, no.
That's nuts.
It's just interesting.
Denver. Something about Denver. No offense to the people in Denver. We know there's good people in Denver, Colorado. There's
plenty of good people out there. That's
awesome families over there.
Just weird.
Stay in that church. You guys are doing great.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know. But who knows? Maybe the Lord will lead us to start a church there one day. Who knows? And that's not the only time that's happened. This happened to us like 3 times already, where like an opportunity to start a church, you know, came to us, and I was like gung ho because I really want to start a church. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because I have a heart for church planning. I just feel like it's important to just flood the United States with churches like ours. But obviously, I'm not just going to rush into anything. But there was like another church. That was like that, and they're just like the buildings paid off, and the buildings paid off, and they can pay for a pastor. We just need a pastor, and it was like a small group of people, and I was just like, I was thinking to myself, well, maybe we can utilize whatever money that they can pay to just fly out like pastors or fly out pastors people and to, people to go preach until we can like train someone. Mm-hmm. And so I basically told him, I said, well, if I go over there, like, I'm going to end up being the pastor. Like, once you guys vote me in, we're throwing out that constitution.
Right. Everything's changing.
Yeah. And so are you fine with that? And then, you know, they talked about it on Sunday night, and they're just like, have him come over. Like, this sounds great. You know, everyone was for it. But then the next day, the deacon's wife, like, just, like, blew up on everyone. It was just like, he's a hate preacher. He says all these things. Do not let him come over here. And they're just like, you can't come. And I was just like, all right. You're lost then, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But that could have been a nightmare too.
Yeah.
You know? And so if anything seems like an overnight type, an opportunity to be an overnight success, it's probably just not a good idea. Better to just have the slow process where you're training someone, doing the boots on the ground, just laboring and failing. It's just, that's a better quality church, you know, rather than the overnight success.
I agree. And it's a lot of work. Like, I can't imagine, I've never run another church plant.
Oh, yeah.
I have enough with one.
Yeah.
Like, that's another thing for me, you know, maybe when I'm not working another full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be a lot more inclined to then want to push a little bit harder to see if we can get another plant going. But for me, I need someone really ready to go.
Oh, yeah.
because I don't have the time.
Yeah, Pastor Thompson, you crazy. This guy has like, what is it, like five churches? One of them is like in a different country. He's like the only new IFB guy who has a church in another country. Like, what is it, in the UK? Which, by the way, that church is doing really good.
Are they?
Yeah, and England, they're just the but you see, here's the thing. He has a great leader there.
That's right.
Who's just, you know, I don't know. He seems like a preaches well.
Yeah.
He's a great leader. He's just doing a great work, and the church is growing. And I think that's, like you were saying, because it's far away, mm-hmm. it's important to have someone who is
like that.
Like that, yeah. Because aside from the fact that you're not going to be dealing with problems, if that person's mature enough to deal with the problems, mm-hmm. two, you know, you can kind of just kind of like let him do whatever he's going to do, because he's going to grow the ministry. He's going to grow the people. He's going to, you know, be a go-getter, a self-starter. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about those things. So that's like the byproduct right there. Mm-hmm. But Pastor Thompson's crazy, man. That's like a lot. He has, I don't know how many church plants, and I'm sure he's planning to start more churches. God bless you.
Yeah, I say God bless him. That's all I got to say is God bless him. You know, I always say that, you know, bless the work. I hope that all those churches succeed and thrive. And
absolutely.
And they're all doing good. Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know of any new IFB church that's not doing good.
Yeah.
I think they're all doing good because of the fact that I think they have the right people in the church as leadership. And you know, they're preaching God's word unfiltered. Mm-hmm. They're not compromising. They're doing a lot of soul winning. And I think God's blessing the churches mm-hmm. because of that. I do want to start churches. I hope one day I can start a church in California. But I just learned from those experiences, those last three, that I'm not going to rush into anything. Because maybe, you know, our church is just not ready for it.
Yeah.
Maybe we're just not ready to do it. Obviously, we need the leadership. But, you know, I just kind of said, whenever that door comes to us, we'll go through it.
Yep.
And, you know, there's no rush. We're only 5 years old. And, you know, we might not start a church until we're 10, 15 years old.
Sure.
Who knows? But until then, just plow away in your church and, you know, just have that vision to start a church one day and prepare.
Yeah, I don't know when, like Faithful Word was 7 years old when Word of Truth was started.
Mm.
And then actually almost eight years old.
Okay.
Because they started 2005, Christmas, and Word of Truth was started in November 2013.
You remember seeing that video? Yeah, Pastor Berzins? He had a really big beard. You're like on the side.
You know, I had that big beard until I burned it in my fire pit.
You like burned it?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That must
I've
have
never,
stunk.
I've never, it stunk really bad. I've never had a big beard like that since.
So you had a big beard and then you, how'd you burn it? What in the world?
Getting
was,
a fire
was the preaching
my fire
that
pit.
Hot or yeah. What?
It's called pouring fuel to the fire.
And what, you just lit it and it just...
Yeah, it just blew. It was a fireball.
But your beard protected your face or something? Or
yeah,
what?
I mean, I didn't get like burned,
oh, okay.
but it made the hairs singe, right? So it just like... and it was noticeable, so like I had to trim it down then. And I was like, all right.
It's like a lopsided beard. Yeah. Funny story about this beard. Man, that's crazy. I'll never forget that video. I remember we used to watch that video.
Commercial?
Yeah, the commercial. It inspired us to make our own. Because when we started a church, I was like, I want to make a video like Pastor Berzins. So when we started Faithful Word Baptist Church in LA, we did one. It was almost like identical to yours. Like we even had the long beard. Yeah, and I was just like, I would watch yours. I was like, I need to do it like this. That was a cool commercial.
Yeah, it was cool.
Was that at your house?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, and
2013.
You know, and Faithful Word was really helpful for us.
Yeah, amen.
That was one of the benefits of having a church plant that was kind of close.
How far was Prescott?
It's like an hour and a half.
Okay.
Somewhere that hour and a half, yeah. Hour 45 minutes. You know, it's far enough, but not too far at all.
Yeah.
So they would send people up occasionally. You know, we would do probably every quarter, maybe people would be coming up. We'd do big soul winning events and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a great blessing having them there.
That's awesome.
To help. And that's one of the benefits, you know, church planning and having someone sort of close, you know, being
yeah.
a couple hours away. You could get a lot of extra additional support from the sending church.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, he's the one, what, you know, that Faith Ward helped us to be able to even produce that commercial because we weren't in any position to do that. But they helped us with that. You know, Paul filmed it and
yeah,
it was cool. It was great.
Yeah, I liked it.
It was a great blessing.
I'm telling you, I remember watching it with Ulysses.
Yeah.
We would watch it like, man, that looks cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah, and then
I need to get back into the video stuff. Man, that's a.
Do you do video editing?
No. Oh, there it is.
Oh, that's it right there.
Yeah, look, that's my house. Man, wasn't that the perfect setup for a church, though?
Yeah.
Like that room was awesome. It looks like a church.
It looks like a church.
Yeah, everything. It's like it's almost like a steeple. You know, we got to
look at the size of that beard, though. So you burn half of that thing, or what? That was no joke. How long did it take you to grow that?
I don't know.
So can you still grow a beard like that, or what? Yeah. Prove it. No, I'm just kidding.
It's November, right? No shave November.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, see, he even, yeah, because remember we said that, I said that in my video too, like old-fashioned, fundamental, King James only. It was like the nicest way to say you're old-fashioned and fundamental.
Having a big old-fashioned beard.
Yeah. Yeah, you still have that pulpit?
I do.
Oh, nice.
I do, yeah, it's raised up a little bit now since then, so it kind of fits my height a little bit better. I was hunched over that thing for like 2 years.
Yeah. How tall are you?
6'2".
Are you taller than Pastor Thompson?
No.
How tall is Pastor Thompson?
He's a giant.
I know he's an Amalekite, but like...
We measure him in cubits. I mean,
I know he's a descendant of...
of Anak.
Of Anak. Yeah, he's pretty... What is he? What is he?
Maybe like 7. He's pretty tall.
7?
Man. Like 6'7". No? Yeah. I think so. I think he's like 6'7", something like that.
Yeah, I don't like standing next to him. It's too big. I feel like he's going to step on me. You know what I mean? No, what'd you say? Oh, yeah. Especially
you feel like a grasshopper in his side.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So then what year? You started in 2000?
13 in Word of Truth and 18 for a stronghold.
Stronghold. Okay, great. That's cool. Well, Lord willing, you know, the Lord will open up some doors for us to start more churches. Mm-hmm. And, you know... Thankfully, I'm thankful that, you know, even though I'm not starting churches, like our friends are, mm-hmm. you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Because you have like Pastor Jimenez starting churches.
It's just a matter of time though. Yeah. Right. I mean, you probably have plenty of guys that are growing spiritually.
Yeah, for
right.
Sure.
I mean, and here's the way I look at it too. We don't just have one guy that we're like training.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a whole bunch of guys that are at different levels of training, but one day.
Yeah.
Then I'm thinking we'll probably be able to start sending off some, you know, doing some more plants in a shorter period of time.
Right.
Because then we'll have gotten a bunch of people ready to go.
Yeah.
And that'll be the time for that. And, you know, we're not there yet, but then the time's going to come and then we'll be going boom, 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 boom. And we'll see kind of like right now we're seeing the growth internally for the home church, right? The only church. Then we'll be reaching the stage of our development where we start to expand out that way.
Amen. That's awesome. That's good.
A totally different subject, if you don't mind me bringing it up.
No, go ahead.
There's something that's been just recently in our soul winning. We've been hitting these neighborhoods. In Atlanta, this is one of the cool things about Atlanta also. It's this hub of like all people from all over the world. It's this international hub. You know, Atlanta Airport's like the busiest international airport like
it's
in the
huge,
world
isn't it the
it's
biggest
huge.
Airport
yeah,
in the United
it's massive.
States yeah
it's massive. The greater Atlanta area has like 10 million people.
Wow.
And they're literally just people from all over the world. So we hit areas, I mean, the area we were just doing on Sunday is like people who speak a lot of Swahili, a lot of African people,
mm-hmm.
and different types too. I mean, there's people kind of from all over. And what we've been using, making the great use of is the Faithful Word app.
Mm.
Do you guys use that out soul winning or no? Like, do you run into pockets of people?
I know people
don't
who
speak
do.
The language?
Yeah, and then you have the languages
yeah,
and different
you just,
gospels
you can just
on
play
the
it. Like, we literally just stand there and play it for them.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not like counting salvations on something where I don't even
but,
speak
I mean,
the
they're
language,
listening to the gospel.
But they get to hear the gospel.
Yeah.
Right? And who knows if they get saved? I mean, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
What a great opportunity. I mean, what a great blessing that we could live in a time where
we
you
could
have
like
the
that.
Plan of salvation in your hand.
Yeah.
And you could just play that for somebody to hear
awesome.
In their language.
Yeah, for sure.
And even have like the translate apps and stuff where you can talk into it. I don't know if you've ever done that before either. You talk and then it'll play it for the other person.
Yeah.
And translate it. And you could kind of, it's a slower process, but... We've been doing a lot with, that's been coming up a lot more recently.
Are there a lot of Hispanics there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Especially in Norcross. Actually, it's a very highly Hispanic area.
Like a lot of Mexicans or Puerto Ricans or
there's a good mix, but a lot of Mexicans.
Okay.
And I mean, that's another thing we plan on doing is doing another having a Spanish service because there's so many Hispanics there.
Really?
And we've got a few people in our church that are fluent.
Speak Spanish, preach in Spanish. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah, I could speak Spanish, but I'm not fluent enough to.
You speak Spanish?
See?
De veras? You can really? Like have a conversation? Wait, why are you scared? I'm gonna start talking to you in Spanish right now.
Do it.
All right. ¿Estás listo?
No entiendo un poquito.
That's what everybody says. No, why does everyone say, yo entiendo un poquito? Let's get something else. Let's see what else you got. Come on. Dígame algo de la Biblia. ¿Me puede decir algo de la Biblia?
Los Efesios, capítulo 2.
He's like, Dios, Jesucristo, salvación. Just kidding.
Porque por gracia sois salvos por la fe, y esto no de vosotros, pues es don de Dios, no por obras, para que nadie se glorie.
You heard it here first, folks. Pastor Dave Verzi just quoted Ephesians 2, verse 8 through 9 in Spanish.
In Spanish.
That's pretty good. So you can preach the gospel in Spanish.
I do, yeah.
Wow.
I have very few salvations just because when I go through the Bible helps me with my Spanish, right? So like if I want to say something, then I could like, oh yeah, that's, you know, this is how I say it and kind of use the Bible as a help.
Yeah.
But if I run into people who.
That's pretty good.
They, their heart, like I have to answer a lot more questions or something. Yeah. Then I'm going to be like, lo siento. Sorry. Gracias por su tiempo, señor.
Dios le bendiga. Vaya con Dios. That's pretty good though.
So.
Can you read in Spanish?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So, I mean.
But the hardest part for me is like people can have different dialects. Mm-hmm. So some people I just cannot understand at all. Seriously. But then there's other people. But think about it. Like I'm in the South. There's people who speak English I can't understand at all. It's the same thing.
A dialect is English.
The people I can communicate with the best are the people who. Even if they only speak Spanish, but
yeah, I could barely understand Pastor Robinson sometimes. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
If they've been in America for a long time and their accent's been Americanized,
yeah,
I can understand that really well.
But if they're like fresh off the boat,
yeah,
Cuba or Puerto Rico or something like that.
That's one, but some of it's just the inflection and the way that they speak. Like I can't even understand what the word is.
I'm fluent in Spanish. I'm fluent in Spanish. I can speak Spanish. I can preach in Spanish. I read in Spanish. But there's certain people like from Cuba or from Puerto Rico. If I had a conversation with, I just don't know what they're saying because maybe they speak too fast or just the way they pronounce certain words. I'm just like, I don't know what he's saying. Like I'll catch words here and there. But I totally agree.
I thrive at Spanglish. you got the person that can speak some English, right? Yeah, and I can speak some Spanish. Yeah. And it's like, hey, we could actually.
So
have a
how did you learn? Do you just learn? Did high you? School. Oh, high school. Yeah. Oh, so you know Spanish is then?
4 years in high school.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So then I was better with the conversational, and then I just didn't do anything with it until Faithful Word, and then, you know, in Phoenix, going soul winning.
Oh, yeah.
I started picking it back up again.
Yeah.
Right? So Pastor Anderson was teaching some Spanish classes, and I was taking those and refreshing a lot of stuff. And
that's because he speaks Spanish fluently.
Mm-hmm. And that's when I started doing the Bible memory in Spanish, you know, and those types of things just to help the soul winning. So, and now it's still very important for soul winning.
So go ahead and introduce yourself at the door in Spanish.
Hola, señor. Me llamo David. Yo soy de la Iglesia Bautista, Stronghold Baptist Church. Here's what I ask people. I say, queremos invitarle a nuestra iglesia, pero más importante que va a la iglesia es una pregunta. Y la pregunta es, ¿sabe usted seguro que va a ir al cielo cuando muerte? Con 100%. I would say con 100%. Because they're always like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So you even pronounce your name in Spanish.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, hola, me llamo David. It's not like you, David. It's just like David. Well, I'm glad you actually pronounce your church in English, because sometimes people will try to, like, they'll speak to someone in Spanish.
Yeah.
And they'll pronounce our church as though, like, we're a Spanish church.
Right.
Like, somos la Iglesia Bautista de Primeras Obras.
Right.
I'm like, that's not the name of the church. I was like, or just say Iglesia Bautista, you know? But, yeah.
Well, a lot of times when people are native, like, they'll say their names Americanized or, like, Englishized, right?
Yeah.
So they'll do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed that a lot.
I do that.
and people do that. I think one of the things I like about preaching the gospel in another language, especially with Spanish, I don't know any other language, so I guess I can't really compare it. but here's the thing: the Hispanic culture is very grateful.
Oh yeah.
When
they see
you see some gringo like me come up, mm-hmm. and then be able to communicate in their language,
I'm more merciful
more often than not. Yeah. And they're always telling me, oh no, you're speaking, because I'm like, lo siento, mi español no es bueno, es muy yeah. malo. But, and they're like, no, it's good.
Yeah.
I'm just like,
to them, it's
thanks,
like,
I know exactly
what you're talking about. They see it like, it's like a noble thing,
right?
That you'd be willing to learn their language to communicate.
Yeah, well, and it makes them, like, they'll listen.
Yeah. Yep.
They do listen. I mean, it's the vast majority of time they're listening.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That is 100% true. I've seen that with other people who are not Hispanic. They'll say that people are a lot more just open to speak.
And,
yeah, forgiving and just be willing to speak to you, because mm-hmm. they see that you're putting in an effort to, like, learn their language and speak it, because it takes a lot
yep.
to just kind of put yourself out there like yep. that.
My favorite thing is catching people that say they don't know English and then you speak Spanish. Like,
oh, that's the best.
Well,
I used to do that in Mandarin, because I was learning Mandarin for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I was doing it because we were, like, in Monterey Park, and so there's a lot of Chinese people there.
Yeah.
But after a while, I was like, I don't think I even need to learn the entire language, because most people here know English.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'd run into someone, and, you know, I'm like, you know, I just want to give an invitation to our church, and they're just yeah. like, no yeah. English, no English. And I'm like, oh, you know, are you Chinese?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, Mandarin. And I'm like, oh, ni hao ma. And they're like, oh, you speak Chinese. I'm like, yeah, you speak English.
Yeah.
And then after a while, then we just talk,
right,
you know?
Right.
So you kind of use that to, like, break
open
the ice.
Door, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Anybody here who speaks Spanish, they do speak English. Even mm-hmm. if they speak it broken, they do speak it, you know.
There's parts in Georgia, like around Atlanta. I mean, you have all kinds of different nationalities, even Hispanic, that they don't speak English.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's great. But there's so many communities, because
mm-hmm.
there's so many people, that I think they're able to survive and do okay without speaking English, because
yeah.
there's enough people that they can associate with, that they could help them, or, you know, even go to businesses.
Yeah.
I mean, there's businesses that just have signs in other languages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have that here too. Whereas, like, cities that are just filled with, like, another language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a lot of Asians. There's, like, a huge Asian population.
What kind of
Korean,
Asians?
A lot of Koreans,
Korean.
Specifically,
okay.
but lots of different types of Asians too. I mean, it's just.
Do you have any Armenians there?
we have Calvinists. Don't I think I've run into one or two Armenians. I was trying to think. Like,
He's like, I'm not a big fan.
I haven't.
Hikes Armenian. That's why I even.
I haven't run into too many. At least.
Okay.
But you hit a pocket, and it's just like, whoa, you know, there's a ton of people there.
Yeah.
And we've got.
So you got
a long
like Hispanics.
Go.
You got Asians. What else?
Black
people.
White, I mean,
white people.
It's the South.
Cool.
But what's cool about our county too, Gwinnett County is one of the most diverse counties probably anywhere.
Hmm.
And what's cool about that too is, like, one of the things I like, what I appreciate about it is, you know, I don't care about segregation one way or the other, honestly. Like, if people naturally segregate because it makes it easier for them. You know, if people are coming from another country, as I said, it's easier to be around people that can speak your language for one,
mm-hmm.
and maybe know some other friends or relatives of yours,
yeah.
and that are going to be helping you, and you live close together. Like, if people want to do that, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not for forcing people to, you all have to mix with.
Yeah.
Who cares? I mean, it's natural for
yep.
that to happen, especially with people that are immigrating.
Right.
But, That being said, you know, like in my neighborhood specifically, there is just, I mean, there's Chinese, black, white, you know, Korean, whatever, like just,
it's like a just about pot.
Just all over the place, just yeah. all living in the same neighborhood, and it's cool, and doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, that's cool. It's kind of how Long Beach is. Long Beach is like a melting pot. You have like a black guy who lives next to a Cambodian, who lives next yeah. to a Mexican. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Well, Pastor Berzins, thank you so much for being on the episode. That was an awesome conversation about church planning,
yep.
soul winning, preparing men for the ministry. And so looking forward to hearing you preach on Thursday. And thankful that you're here. Hopefully we'll still have a church after you're done preaching. And that's pretty much it, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Rod of Iron podcast. Tune in next, probably like in 2 weeks or so, for the next episode. Have a good night.